There's been a lot of criticism aimed at liberal arts college education these days. It's too expensive, fails to prepare students for real jobs. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
But our next guest says that this criticism of liberal education is nothing new. And despite centuries of naysaying, a liberal education has long been essential to America's flourishing democracy and will remain essential for a long time to come.
Joining us now is Michael Roth. He's president of Wesleyan University. He's author of the new book, Beyond the University, Why Liberal Education Matters. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much for having me.
So I mentioned a couple of the common catchphrases there. Too expensive, not leading kids to a real job in their careers. We hear a lot of that. What's your reaction when you hear those?
Well, I think there's grains of truth in those complaints. The costs of higher education and for many people have gotten out of control, and there is for many schools an arms race in providing amenities for students in order to attract those who have acquired a taste for luxury, and then in the large public universities, there's just been a tremendous decline in support for education. And one of the things that struck me as I began to do the research on this book was that these issues, whether you're just giving students too much luxury when they come to college or whether the state should support higher education with higher taxes, these are issues that Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin were talking about a long time ago. And so I think that in America, there's been a healthy tension between having a broad contextual education, the usefulness of which isn't immediately obvious, and the demand for being practical and pragmatic, which is also a deep American cultural attribute. And so I think that that tension keeps our colleges and universities producing students and producing research that is really useful, that students who do have practical skills. At the same time, it doesn't try to simply serve the immediate interests of employers, which I think would be a great mistake. So that tension between the broad contextual education and the practical education is a healthy one. Contemporary pundits who say we should just, you know, get rid of the broad contextual education in favor of some narrow utilitarian instruction, I think they're really just trying to make sure that the status quo doesn't change, that those people who have great jobs and do have access to power and money will retain that, and the people who they don't think deserve that will be instructed for very narrow technical tasks.
Liberal education, the phrase, might mean different things to different people. What does it look like? What should it be?
It's a broad contextual education. That means it looks at whatever subject is at hand, not just in terms of its immediate meaning in the world or its immediate value in the world, but tries to understand it conceptually and historically. And so what that means is you approach a subject, and it could be engineering or it could be history, it could be physics or religion. You approach that subject with the idea that through the study of that subject, what you learn is how to learn, how to continue your inquiry, how you can continue to your quest for understanding. Because what we want from our students when they graduate colleges and universities is not just immediate preparation. We do want them to have certain skills, but we also want them to be adaptable. We want them to be able to translate things. We want them to have learned how to learn and to acquire a taste for inquiry that will serve them for a long time after graduation. I actually think right now this is much more valuable than it ever was, because the pace of change today is so much more rapid than it has been in the past. And if you prepared for, you know, your first job in college, that's going to be your worst job, the worst job you'll ever have, I hope. But the world is going to change very rapidly. And what you want to be able to do is not just react to change or be a victim of it, but to shape change. And I think a liberal education, whatever the subject is you're studying, a broad contextual education that looks at things from a variety of perspectives, that produces in our students the ability to keep learning and to create change and create innovation.
Probably one of the most dreaded questions for an educator at any level, or dreaded statements, is, I'm never going to use that. whether it's an engineer, say, talking about a social science class, or somebody who's going to go into writing talking about math. How do you make the case to the student themselves that that well-rounded contextual education is good for them?
Well, I think that it starts earlier than a college education. It starts really in elementary school and high school, where students, if they when they have an education that's not just built about being successful on a test, if it's really built on learning how to learn, they acquire the taste for learning. And not everybody has it in the same way, obviously, right? Some people will go to college and they'll take a Shakespeare class and they'll be over the moon. They'll think that's really wonderful. Other people will be bored silly. It's not one size fits all. But I do think that the students who come to colleges and universities should have their curiosity cultivated. They don't know exactly what's going to be useful tomorrow, because nobody knows what's going to be useful in 5 years. What we need for them to do is to understand how they think well, how they can initiate inquiries that are productive, how they can make things that other people find valuable. So in liberal arts colleges and universities today, there are many ways to pursue this. Some people might be in computer science, and other people it might be in music. And then we have plenty here at Wesleyan who are doing computer science and music. Now, they don't know exactly what's going to be useful, but when they graduate, they have the capacity to put things together in new ways. And the ability today to put things together in new ways and ways that other people find valuable is an enormous resource. That's one of the great things that, you know, that technology gives us, is a facility of recombining things, reconnecting things in ways that other people will find useful and valuable. And students see the joy in that, see the pleasure in it. But again, not everybody who's going to find it in the same way. You know, long ago, and in the European tradition, liberal arts meant certain subjects. So you had to learn Greek, or you had to learn certain things about certain historical epochs. That's not what liberal education in America is about. Liberal education in America is about learning the practice of inquiry and creativity. And that can happen in a number of disciplines.
Well, it sounds like in this case, it's not so important what you teach and learn, but how you teach and learn. Any subject could be taught in a way that goes toward that context and the ability to recombine what's out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just that you're not trying to learn just so you become a specialist. You don't want to learn just so you become pedantic. You want to learn in such a way, whatever the subject is, that you can become more creative with what you know. I'll give you the example of a student who graduated from Wesleyan just a couple of years ago, who was doing an art major and combined with computer science. And he built these extraordinary sculptures that were based on an algorithm that he created. The size of the sculpture was determined by how much money a friend of his, who was the model, made for Google through their advertising. So they're all fully to scale, but some of them were enormous because the people did a lot of searches and used a lot of clicked on the ads, and others were very small scale because they didn't earn as much for Google. Well, he didn't know if that was going to be useful. He had this idea of a cool art project, which actually was really cool, and it was displayed in his gallery. But when the folks from Google heard about it, they offered him a job. Now, that's a great success story, but it's a success story not because he knew that that's what he wanted to do, but because he let his imagination take wing and develop the skill to turn what he was imagining into something somebody else would find valuable. And I think at our great liberal arts colleges and universities that focus on undergraduate learning, we give students both that giving your imagination freedom, but also insisting that you learn how to build something. In other words, the algorithm had to work, otherwise the whole thing falls apart. You do need to learn certain concrete skills, but to learn them in such a way that you can produce things that other people didn't expect. And that's where value comes from, right? When you do something that's surprising with skills that somebody thought they already understood.
We're talking to Wesleyan University President Michael Roth, author of Beyond the University. We're talking about the value of a liberal education. We want to know what you think. In today's digital age, our competitive economy, does a liberal arts education still matter? If you graduated with a liberal arts degree, how did it help you or hurt you in the working world? Or if you had something that was more career-focused, a technical degree, do you regret that? Do you wish you'd had more of a liberal arts degree, or you're glad you went the way you did? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We're talking with Wesleyan University President Michael Roth. In his new book, Beyond the University, he makes the case that in today's increasingly competitive economy, a liberal education still matters and remains important for many years to come. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you agree with them? Do you think liberal arts education is key to individual success, fulfillment, key to our thriving democracy? Or do you think we should focus more on job preparation in higher education? 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll go straight to a caller. We've got Charlie on the line in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a liberal arts education, and I recognize its value. But I also would say that I think in today's situation, the students should know the cost of that education, how they're going to finance it, and then once they're done, the economic outlook for the specialty that they choose, whether it's anthropology or economics. I guess my real thing is that if we are training these people to be thinkers, they should have all the facts so that they know the situation that they are putting themselves in as they pursue this liberal arts education without the bankable skills that other educations provide. Thank you.
Charlie, thanks for the call. Michael, some contextual information about what you're getting into in the liberal arts.
Yeah, Charlie makes a good point. I think that that kind of information can be very helpful, but you have to make sure it's accurate. And you know, many graduates from liberal arts colleges and universities actually wind up with higher earnings than people who say, I'm choosing a business degree or business major because I think it's going to be intensely practical, but they find themselves with their business or communications major in a worse position than someone who majored, let's say, in philosophy, but actually has skills that that lots of people find useful. I think it is important for, especially when people are paying a lot of money for these for this education. It's very important for them to understand the value of the degree, but they have to also understand that that value should be revealed over time. It's not just going to be value on day one. It's going to be a value that continues to pay dividends for years after graduation. But I do think finding ways to control costs of education is such an important thing for those of us in higher ed, whether it's with online courses or whether it's in changing the time to degree. But we have to give our students more vehicles for getting their education in ways that are affordable.
One of the things that struck me on your about your book, and you referenced this earlier, is how non-new these arguments are in some ways. And one that was new to me was going back to Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois, figuring out the role of higher education for African Americans in the post-Civil War, post-Reconstruction era. Can you talk us through that debate?
Sure. So one of the things that interested me so much when I did this research, and I'm not an American historian by my own education, I'm a French historian, was that the strong current of thinking about education from the Civil War onwards among African-American intellectuals, whether it's David Walker or Frederick Douglass, right in the during the Civil War and then afterwards, or later on with Booker T. Washington, who thought that what was most important is that freed slaves and their immediate descendants should get a trade and the tools to work it. And Du Bois, who said, you know, a trade is very important, but don't consign people to the job you think, the only job you think they can do. Some people will take a trade and that will be their happiness and their livelihood. But some people will actually, through their education, go, take take a trade and then do something completely different with it. And what Du Bois was saying to Washington, don't narrow our horizons. He wasn't saying let everybody be a dreamer and think they don't have to make any money. He realized it, just like John Dewey did a generation later, that people are going to have to work. You know, this is not a liberal education for some elite group of rich guys. But Du Bois said, don't limit our horizons just because we come from an oppressed group of people. Don't just because we were slaves. Don't limit our horizons. Expand our horizons. And education expands your horizons.
Well, and you mentioned, I think your version of the joke is bartenders with chemistry degrees around, yeah, at least in the Madison part of Wisconsin, it's cab drivers with PhDs in philosophy. You seem to make the case, why not?
Well, I think that the rhetoric of certain critics of liberal education today is really rhetoric about people who don't like the idea that citizens are learning enough so that they can actually think through their own political choices and their own choices in their own lives. We used to say, you know, those old World War II movies where the guy who knows how to read Shakespeare or something, but he's not actually a professor. He's right. He just loves Shakespeare or some other form of literature. There was a sign of the kind of the American democratic ideal that you could be a cab driver and you could have intellectual interests. You could be a mailman and have a PhD. And the critics say, well, why would you want to have a PhD if you're only going to be a cab driver? Well, that's up to the person who has expanded her or his intellectual horizons. Now, I'm not that naive to say that somebody might be in great debt and, you know, and having a job they don't like. That is a problem. And we have to find ways to control the cost of higher education. But the fact that we want our citizens to have a broad contextual education, not necessarily a PhD, of course, but a broad contextual education, that's a great thing about America, not something to be lamented. And, you know, if people want to stay in Madison or Milwaukee because they love the cities, but they have advanced degrees, then they'll find other things to do. But for me, that's not a waste. That's actually they're bringing their education to their lives in ways that perhaps faculty members don't.
Well, turning to the frontiers of modern education, we see the rise of the MOOCs, the massive open online classes, and a lot of attention has gone toward the very practical one. I'm going to get certified in blank by taking this massive class. You say, as a guy who advocates liberal arts education, hey, maybe there's room in here for us too.
Absolutely. I've taught probably 100,000 students online in the last year and a half. And I have spent my life in small colleges, ever since I was a student at Wesleyan in the 70s. And so in the last 2 years, I've taught a great books course on Coursera through our Wesleyan partnership. And I taught a course called How to Change the World, which is about politics and activism and the global challenges they face. And I have found teaching these students from all over the world, I mean, more than 100 countries are represented in our classes online, I have found a vigorous appetite for learning and for debate on the discussion boards and for penetrating inquiry from many of the students. So I know that it's not the same to teach. I'm teaching a course, let's say, with Virginia Woolf's our reading for the week. It's not the same to teach that to 50,000 people online as it is to teach it to 15 people in my office. But there is something extraordinarily powerful about teaching great books or teaching about art or teaching about film online. And what we have discovered is that there is an enormous appetite all over the world for American liberal education. And that for me is very encouraging. And our courses, the ones we mount, they're not very expensive to put together. We don't try to fill it full of bells and whistles. People don't want that. They want authentic intellectual stimulation through video and discussion boards. And I think that the response to it has been extraordinarily encouraging for somebody like me who's been teaching these kinds of courses, you know, for the last 25 years.
You've made the case, as we've been talking, about the personal benefits of the liberal education, a well-rounded liberal arts contextual education, both for personal fulfillment and for our careers. What's in it for us as a society of making sure that at least a good chunk of people are getting this kind of liberal arts education?
Well, you know, Thomas Jefferson said it long ago that education is our best defense against tyranny. And the ways in which the tyrannical governments or rapacious economic elites control other people is by pulling the wool over their eyes, is by convincing them of things that aren't true, is by denying their rights while pretending to do otherwise. And the best defense against that is an education. So you don't have to learn Greek, you don't have to learn a certain historical epoch, or it's not about the particular kind of class, but to learn how to participate in inquiry is what protects our democracy, our fragile democracy, from the oligarchy and from government domination. And I think it's so crucial, and it's been crucial throughout American history. I mean, Ben Franklin said much the same thing. Du Bois said it. Dewey said it. Martha Nussbaum says it today, that a broad contextual education is what gives us as citizens the capacity to understand how we're being governed and to change how we are being governed. And I do think when people complain about education today, they often want us just to be more conforming to the status quo, and education could give us the tools to be critical of the status quo.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
That's Michael Roth. He's the president of Wesleyan University. His new book is Beyond the University: Why Liberal Education Matters.